We need you now. One generous Marketplace fan, Dr. Joe Rush from Florida, is offering to match the next $50,000 in donations to Marketplace. And every single gift gets us closer to a critically important May fundraising goal. Give right now and double your impact thanks to this generous match. Go to marketplace.org/donate.
My name is Lee Hawkins. I've been a journalist for over 25 years. On my new podcast, What Happened in Alabama, I get answers to some of the hardest questions about how things came to be for many Black Americans and the truth that must come before any reconciliation can happen. I investigate my family history, my upbringing in Minnesota, and my father's painful nightmares about growing up in Alabama. What Happened in Alabama is a new series confronting the cycles of trauma for myself, my family, and for many Black Americans. Listen now.
Australia was one of the first countries to police social media. Now it's doubling down. Live from London, this is the Marketplace Morning Report from the BBC World Service. I'm Victoria Craig. Good morning. Australia's competition watchdog called for tighter online regulations. Now the government has installed a task force to monitor actions of tech giants like Google and Facebook. The BBC's Matthew Davis reports.
Australia's Competition and Consumer Commission wants to rein in the power of the digital titans, following concerns ranging from antitrust issues to privacy to fake news and hate speech. Prime Minister Scott Morrison said as far as regulations and laws are concerned, the world of social media should be no different from the everyday world. The task force will be able to take action where necessary, but for some, the watchdog's teeth are not sharp enough. Mr. Morrison said some of the stronger proposals to police the online world would need further consideration. These would include opening up commercially sensitive algorithms to outside scrutiny. Around 17 million Australians use Facebook each month and spend an average of 30 minutes on the platform every day, while 98% of Australian mobile searches use Google. I'm the BBC's Matthew Davis for Marketplace.
Let's do the numbers. After a blockbuster debut yesterday, Saudi Aramco shares jumped another 10% today, valuing the company at more than $2 trillion. Stocks in Asia, meanwhile, were mixed after reports the U.S. will move ahead with new tariffs on $156 billion worth of Chinese goods on Sunday. It's a big day for Christine Lagarde, who took over from Mario Draghi as head of the European Central Bank last month. She'll chair her first policy meeting and press conference today. ING's chief economist, Karsten Breske, says it will be anything but boring.
Christine Lagarde is not this technical economist like Mario Draghi was. So she's more the politician, the policy manager. So I expect her to be a bit more broader speaking, not going into every single detail of economic indicators, but rather trying to tell the bigger picture, which might be more amusing for the broader public, but there is the risk she makes any slip of the tongue, whether she will be slightly too lighthearted about economic data in this attempt to be a bit more plain language talking.
Now, when it comes to policy, Mario Draghi, her predecessor, made a rather dramatic debut during the Eurozone debt crisis when he did a U-turn on policy and cut rates at his first meeting. Are we expecting anything as headline-grabbing from her on policy?
No, not really. I think we will not see any policy changes. Now, even some German and Northern European citizens might wish for a reversal of what they think has been really horrible monetary policy making over the last couple of years. And there is increasing pressure on the ECB to at least rethink the need for negative interest rates, to rethink the need for QE, because there are adverse effects on the financial sector. Having listened to Lagarde, to other ECB officials in recent weeks, there has been really no one arguing in favor of an imminent change in monetary policy.
A big day for communication there at the ECB today. Karsten Breske, ING's chief economist in Germany. Thank you.
You're welcome.
Millions of people will order gifts online this holiday season, which means demand for delivery services is growing. The BBC's Edwin Lane explains then how the gig economy is powering Christmas.
I'm just going to have to try and pull into this Christmas driveway a little bit so I can jump out and deliver it.
This is Matt. He's 26 and he lives in the UK. His day job is at a major bank, but in the evenings he delivers parcels door-to-door for Amazon.
So we've got 37 for tonight.
So that gives you 5.6 minutes per parcel.
It's 2045 minutes essentially to get all of the 37 parcels out by the time we get there. I reckon I can probably average about 15 an hour, so really we should have quite a bit of time left over.
Matt's not an Amazon employee. Instead, he's part of an army of gig economy workers that Amazon uses around the world, organised through an app called Amazon Flex. Almost anyone with a car and a driver's licence can sign up and pick up a shift delivering parcels.
I like the flexibility of it. I like the fact that if I'm at work and somebody wants to go out that evening, I know that if I don't feel like I need that money at the time, I can just drop the block and go out and do whatever I want, and I've not got to justify that to anybody. If we were to be classed as employees and we were to get statutory sick pay as a minimum and we were to get holiday pay and all that kind of stuff, they'll say you have to work this many hours or you have to work on this evening. At that point, I just feel like that would take away the core reason that I'm doing this.
But like other parts of the gig economy, that flexibility can leave workers vulnerable. There's no guarantee of getting a shift, and flex workers worry about being kicked off the app without warning if they show up late or can't deliver the parcels in time. Retail analyst Andrew Lipsman from the research firm eMarketer says it's all down to Amazon Prime, Amazon's subscription model that has made next day or even same day delivery the norm.
That creates a lot of operational demands that require all the logistics side of the business to be faster and more efficient. And we've seen a lot of movement here in the US from some of the key competitors, Walmart and Target, to get a lot faster and provide a lot more of their products on next day and same day time horizons. That's sending a ripple effect across the entire consumer economy, where it's not just the leaders who are getting faster.
The growth of e-commerce means the number of parcels being sent every year continues to grow. And it's the gig economy that's helping them get to your door. In London, I'm the BBC's Edwin Lane for Marketplace.
Finally, we haven't mentioned a big event here in the UK today, the country's third general election in less than 5 years. That's because here, broadcast media are prohibited from reporting until polls close so as not to influence voters. Join us tomorrow to find out what the result means for business and Brexit. In London, I'm Victoria Craig with the Marketplace Morning Report from the BBC World Service.
Hey everyone, it's Rima Khreis, host of This Is Uncomfortable. If you're looking for some good recommendations on books to read, well, you should join This Is Uncomfortable's Summer Book Club. Every other week in our newsletter, we'll share a new book that'll make you rethink your relationship to money, class, and work, while also featuring an interview with the author or an expert on the topic. Plus, when you join, you'll be entered in a giveaway where you could win some This Is Uncomfortable merch. Be sure to check it out. Sign up today at marketplace.org/bookclub.